the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez. And before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Bobby Osinski. Bobby, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Mike.
Next to Bobby, we've got the one and only Diego Stucco. Diego!
Hey, Mike!
He said Stucco.
He knows how to say my name, actually. No, he knows. We'll get back to that soon.
Next to him, we have the one and only Brandon Bertine.
What's up, Mike?
And next to him, we've got the one and only Forrest Robinson.
Hello, Mike.
And over here on my left, we've got the Iron Man of the Audio Nowcast. Rob, this is my 99th show, Arbiter.
Wow, it's 99.
Happy New Year, Mike.
This is show number 99, guys.
Pretty
99.
Awesome.
Wow. One away from 100.
Pretty nice. Get smart.
And today we are honored to have with us as our guest sitting in on the Audio Nowcast, well, producer, songwriter extraordinaire, Patrick Leonard. Patrick, thank you so much for joining
us.
My
pleasure. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. And Patrick and Diego are working on a really cool project that some of you may have seen on the web, and we'll talk about it in a little bit. But once again, thank you for joining us, Patrick. And Diego, it's good
thank
to
you.
See you.
Good to see you, too, guys.
It's been a little bit.
Yeah, I was hiding. Actually, Patrick was keeping me under.
He needed some things burned around the house.
I wish I could share this letter that I just got today.
Oh, yeah, you got to tell people about it.
Okay, we're going to post a picture on Facebook, okay? Because it says Diego Stucco,
but it's
piano
from Office,
burner.
Office Max.
Yes, it's from Office Max. Yeah. It says Diego Stucco, piano burner. That's really
well, maybe they're having a special on lighters or something.
You never.
Well, all I know is there's one passionate piano person out there that does not like you, really.
sitting across from you.
You're the one who wrote the nasty emails.
When Diego and I met, it was at a composer's salon in Venice, and I wasn't familiar with him, and he did his thing, and then I went up next, and he was sitting there, and I said, I think you're brilliant. Stay out of my studio.
It's got a beautiful stairway. Every time I go there, I feel like, a hitch in my legs.
And as I watch and watch and watch.
That's very funny.
Not good.
Well, I hope all you guys had a good holiday season. I had a pretty good holiday season. It was great just to take a little break.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I want to start with is apparently 2010 was the worst year for album sales, for music sales, and that's taken into account both the physical media and downloads of albums, and even what they call compilations of 10 songs or more from an artist. And it was down 12% for album sales with the digital downloads. And if you include the compilations of 10 songs from an artist, it was still down 9% from the year before. And I just wanted to open it up and ask you guys what you thought on that, because it seems like there is more and more music, and I have a hard time believing it's all because of piracy, because I'm actually buying a lot of music online. So, you know, let's just open it up for a second. I just want to get your opinion. Bobby, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, there's some thought that, in fact, it has to do with the increased viewership of YouTube, Vevo, and listening to Pandora. And since you're not paying for all those, you're still consuming music.
Right.
But now the good part about that is if people are getting used to subscription, we're just one step away from subscription, which is kind of the holy grail for the record labels. They really want a subscription model to happen. The idea that you're going to have 50 million people spending $10 a month
right.
to consume, you know, all you want
right.
of music, but that's kind of like the holy grail. But now everyone feels that, in fact, that's, you know, right around the corner. If Apple would go subscription, then the world would follow in a second.
Well, yeah. Being that a lot of you make music, are you looking forward to a subscription model, or it would Is that something that concerns you, or does that scare you, being, you know, a subscription as opposed to being able to have direct royalties tied to sales?
Well, what I was saying about YouTube and right. other channels, it's not going to disappear. It's just going to increase. Myself, too. I mean, when I want to listen to a song, right. for example, I was listening to the radio on iTunes, then I read the title of that song and I wanted to listen to that again. I didn't go to Amazon or you know, iTunes. Yeah, I just went to YouTube and I found it. There's a nice video as well. So it's just, it works that way. And right. there's a
or Groove Shark.
Yeah, right. And there's a lot of people that they don't really do it with the intention of hurting anybody.
Right,
it's
right.
just a channel. It's like turning on TV right now.
And see, I struggle with this whole internet streaming thing, because as an industry, you know, I always want to see music do good. I want people to sell music. I want people to write music, because I want the money to be there, because it kind of benefits us all, because then people buy instruments and they invest in technology and it kind of keeps rolling. And what concerns me is when you get a lot of streaming, and let's face it, I mean, everybody does it. I love Pandora. You know, I mean, I've made a gazillion little radio stations and listened to all of them. But at the same time, I try to buy music also so that I can play it on my time, not necessarily, you know, when somebody feeds it to me. But it just seems like music is getting cheaper and cheaper, and people are, you know, it's not important anymore. You know, it's just, there's a whole generation that doesn't know what it's like to spend a Friday night at a Tower Records.
But you know what I think? I don't think music is losing importance. I think it's the way people perceive the using music. That's changing completely. People still love music. They still want to have music all around every day, but they don't perceive it as something that they have to buy, because these new channels, they got into this way of listening and consuming music that it's totally fine for them. It's not illegal at all. It's up there. So they I know your point of view, and it's our point of view because we're musicians here, but they don't perceive it as I'm stealing something from someone.
I mean, I've believed for a long time that if you're an artist, music is your calling card, but you need to use the music as your commercial to sell the stuff that's actually going to make you money. The merchandise, the live performances. You know, once something loses its value, and music is losing its perceived value to people. I mean, no one can live without it, but no one wants to pay for it, is the way things are going. Once it loses that value, I don't think it gets it back. And as long as you have YouTube, where you can go not only hear the music, but see a video. And even if it sounds like, you know, junk, most people don't care, as long as they're hearing the song they were looking for. It's hard to imagine that going away and music regaining its financial value.
But look, how is that different from the 50s and 60s when you listened on the AM radio for the most part, right? So maybe you consumed because there's no other way to get the music when you wanted exactly.
Well, that's the big difference, though. You can get it whenever you want.
You can get it whenever you want it now, but just from the standpoint of quality, you're listening on AM radio.
But you know what? YouTube, most people would not tell you YouTube doesn't sound good. You know, people in the industry would, and people, you know, who really care about sound quality would, but the majority of the public don't know or care.
There's no reference point.
Yeah. There's no reference
point. Yeah. It's amazing.
Good enough becomes, you know, the standard.
It's amazing how low the bar has gotten. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. It's hilarious because we all used to make fun of how CDs sounded, and now CDs is this, like, unattainable gold standard, you know, that nothing can live up to.
Patrick, what do you think? How do you weigh in on this? You've seen a lot of changes and
can I take the fifth? Really, no, I should take the fifth, or I'll be hunted down and murdered. And it's bad enough already.
If I could...
I weigh in from a different perspective, in that I believe, for numerous reasons, that people don't... they don't register a sense of satisfaction from sound quality. They register a sense of satisfaction from notes. And only that emotional satisfaction only comes from being challenged by the notes and deceived in a cadence so that the mind is suspended and then finally relieved. And so there's an emotional involvement. And so all of this, and the situation we're in is a condition of music becoming so simplistic that it no longer challenges the listener, and they've simply lost interest.
That's true.
Huh. And we as a collective, and not necessarily the artists and musicians, but the collective has always put out a request, and the artists have answered that request through what Plato called the muse. What did he know? And at this point, the muse is saying, I need it now, I need it quick, I need it for free, and I need it to fit, you know, to fit my dress or my pants. It needs to match. And so the actual demand that's being put on the artist or the creator, even the young, brilliant, potential pioneers, is kind of gone. And as that is gone, the statement that it's not going to come back for monetary reasons... Oh, that was interesting. What was that?
It came from there.
I liked it.
I liked it.
It was great. Those are good. It was a great little thing.
It's random.
You know, you put like a flat five below that as a tonic.
Yeah, and then just
so
a
ugly
drone.
People would go, wow, that was really ugly.
You can make it simplistic.
Yes.
Yeah. They would care.
And then you give it to Brandon, and he makes a trailer out of it.
Anyway, the thing of it is, you know, in my musical life, I started very young and studied a lot and still do. And one of the things that never seems to fail is that when you challenge people's ears, you get their attention. And when you stop challenging their ears, they lose attention. And we're suffering from that worse than we're suffering from anything else. And we're all looking at the other conditions because, forgive me, we're not musicians. Those of us that are can see the bleeding.
Right.
Because we sit at our instruments every day and go, how do I stop the bleeding? And the only answer is I can only stop the bleeding from me. I can only play notes that challenge me and maybe a couple people around me that are willing to listen.
Huh.
And that's the best I can do. And even in that, the call from the world to provide something that challenges or that somehow rebels or that somehow is punk or psychedelic rock or Stravinsky or Schoenberg that just made people throw up. I mean, people were put in the hospital because they weren't familiar with it. They didn't understand it, and it literally upset their sensibilities. Let's hope that somebody comes along that pisses people off enough to get them interested again.
That's a good one. Yeah.
You know,
glad you asked.
Speaking to that, Patrick, it's funny you should bring that up because I just started to write a book with Ken Scott. Ken Scott was one of the four Beatle engineers, and he was also David Bowie's producer, Supertramp.
Yeah.
And in one of our conversations, he was saying that Bowie would put his arrangements together in such a way that a lot of times he and Scott and Mick Ronson would be listening in the control room thinking, that's a mistake. We have to go back and fix that. The second time they had listened through, they just find that they were being challenged. Their ear was being challenged. And it was just something that was a left turn.
Soon it becomes something beautiful.
And it soon became something beautiful.
Exactly.
But that was something that constantly happened. Mm-hmm. And of course, we're not allowed to do that so much anymore with the way music is right now. There's a formula.
You have to want to, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to want to, and there has to be a reason. There has to, you know, everyone needs a cause, you know. There has to be someone saying, how do we raise the bar on this? And at this point, from where? I can be so cynical, it's awful. So you're at your own risk asking these questions, I swear.
No, I think, you know, I actually think that it's pretty brilliant. I mean, I've never really kind of associated that with, you know, the lack of challenge to the listener, really. But at the same time, how would you fix that? How would you do that? I mean,
it has to come from the people. The people have to, the consciousness that needs music. You know, Diego was saying, we still want music. We want it as wallpaper. It's not that we don't want to pay for it. It's none of that. It's nothing at all. Until it has a value that somehow lifts you or alters your mood or challenges you in some way, you're going to ignore it. And for us to want that again, I don't know what's going to make us want that. I really don't.
If there was an act that broke out big, that was like that, that would change the trend and everybody would follow it.
It could, yeah.
But it would change the perception of music, but it wouldn't necessarily mean that people would want to pay for that new artist's music. I mean, they'd go check it out on YouTube. I mean, yeah. It could change the quality of writing that's going on, yeah. Which we all agree needs to happen. But the financial model.
But if you,
I don't know.
If you, in what I said in my cynical perspective, I think the most important factor is that the artists are only receptors for the muse that's created by the collective. And as long as the collective doesn't care, I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. It's for those of us that are, you know, and when I say us, I humbly, you know, cripple myself every day by trying to look at Rachmaninoff or Ravel or whatever in whatever way I can to say, here's something that I will never in my life achieve, and it keeps me breathing. Because if I look anywhere else, I'm in big trouble. So if I'm any kind of an example of people that look at what is out there and perceive it and can't find it, and people try to show me things constantly. Did you hear this? Did you hear this? It's like when you can predict it from the first 8 bars, when I can say, do you want to stop it and I'll tell you how it ends? I'm sorry. I know how horrible that sounds, but after 150 albums and some 3,000 songs in 40 years, unless it's mutated to a point where it really isn't something that I'm remotely familiar with, I get it.
Yeah.
And when I get it already, why would I engage it? To your point, why would I pay for it?
Yeah. This is an interesting point, because actually people right now, if you listen to music, they don't even question themselves about what they're listening. They just want to feel familiar into that little 4 chords progression.
Yeah.
You know?
People like what they know. And
right,
so,
right.
You know, if somebody comes out who's really revolutionary and completely changes the conversation, that's awesome. That happens much less frequently than someone coming out who's just 10% innovative or 20% innovative.
Who's done it?
Who's done it recently? I couldn't tell you anyone who's done it in the last couple decades. I think it's when, you know, Stevie Wonder was starting to happen and the Beatles were starting to happen and you know, early rock and roll was starting to happen. Maybe so, when early hip-hop was starting to happen, it hasn't happened that
many
times.
All of the young, brilliant people that are out there, of which there are a few, that are going to hunt us down for this conversation, what do we do to help them? Because that's if there is a crusade for any of us, it's that. It's what do we do to help?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think there's some pretty brilliant people that are doing some great stuff in the electronic world. You know, I look at bands like Hybrid, or look at
Trent Moeller.
Yeah, Trent Moeller or Daft Punk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when the Discovery album came out, that was pretty dang revolutionary. That especially for that type of music at that time, you know, and. There's a couple of the songs, the first time you hear it, you don't know where they're going to take you.
I think part of it, there is talent out there, and I think part of it is in the cacophony of everything that people hear in their daily life and the amount of stuff you can actually find out on the internet.
Right.
You know, a lot of people don't have a compass to help tell them where to go to help find things. And something like Pandora doesn't stretch you much. I mean, it basically finds stuff you already like and finds other things kind of like that. And maybe every now and then it'll stretch your sensibilities a little, but that's not really what it's for.
Right.
You know, they'd be the first to say it's there to find stuff that you like, not necessarily to stretch what you like. I think you can help people. You could help by finding a way to let people connect with those innovative young talents, to see what people are doing out there. Because I'm sure there's stuff going on that's revolutionary.
I'm going to be a little more of a troublemaker. What about the young talent itself? Because that's really the root.
But they have a chance now to be heard that they didn't have in the last...
What do they have a chance to create? Not to be heard, but what are they going to create and why are they going to create it?
I mean...
What's the call to them? Because I know what the call to me was when I was that age.
The call is...
It was
call
a combination
is the hard
of Bach
part.
And Pink Floyd.
Right. Well, but the thing
it's
is, back
hard
then,
to get wrong.
Back then, you needed to have the call to create it, but it also took a lot of very expensive technology, and there was a lot of times people would have an idea and had no way to realize it. And now they
before?
Do. Yeah, before.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have an idea in the 70s, but unless you had a major budget, you weren't going into a big studio.
I found the solution was practice. That might be kind of goofy these days.
No, we've talked about that before. Practice is everything. And we were talking once about, you know, what's the best thing you can give someone who has a studio. And I said the best thing I could think of would be a great lesson from a great teacher on your instrument. You know, I'm a firm believer that real talent eventually always gets discovered because there's such a hunger for talent out there. So really the best thing you can do is become a virtuoso in your instrument.
You know what to me makes a big difference is how much energy you just put into it. It sounds like a stupid thing because, you know, okay, everybody puts energy into what they do. It's not true. Because now you have technology, you have everything available, you have instruments, you have everything, and still people complain, oh, I don't have that plugin, I don't have that thing. Mm-hmm. Stop complaining. Yeah. Just do use it. What you have and do something. Yeah.
It's like my son. I have a 19-year-old son at CalArts, and he, you know, comes to me and says, this record, what did you use? It's like, it's what a strangled, like a microphone.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. I think you brought up the point as far as the young talent, you know, what motivates them. But maybe the motivation could be just simple as just
girls.
Like it always been.
Girls, there we go.
But just
that's why we need more girls.
But just the fact that they, you know, maybe they just want to do, you know, they're starting their journey, and maybe it's nothing more than they want to hear those four chords again, and they want to write those simple songs. And that, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that on their journey. I mean, there's always going to be a place for pop. There always has been. You know, you look back, we tend to romanticize, you know, the good old days, but you know what? There were bad songs in the 50s. There were bad songs in
the
40s.
One of my favorites is, what was number one when Whole Lotta Love came out?
I don't know.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got the
name.
By the 1910 fruit cup. That's what was number one when Whole Lotta Love came out. So let's not get too romantic about it.
That's what I'm saying.
Sonny and Cher was more popular than ever.
I mean, there's always been that just gumball, just you know, that streak.
Do you guys think it's a downward spiral of what the young artists are being exposed to and inspired by? If all you're exposed to is just what's on the radio and this generic top 40,
you know what I think?
I think it's
an upward spiral in terms of how much stuff there's out there.
Because
the listeners are getting choked by so much music, and the musicians are also getting choked by the amount of stuff that it's surrounding them.
Too many choices, and you don't know what to do.
Yeah, and it's like when you sit down and you do, okay, now what I'm going to do, this, and then you turn on Pandora, YouTube, this and that, and you hear 50,000 things at the same time. You go, you know what, I'm just going to go fishing today.
Do you ever hear the salesman's rule? The salesman's rule? This is what they teach you when you're a salesman, so I hear. I've never really been one. But
you're about to sell this idea, though, aren't you?
That if you have too many choices, you're supposed to limit the choices that you give to somebody to. Mm-hmm. It's either this one, it's white or it's black, it's green or it's blue, and three at the most, because if you give someone more than that, they throw their hands up in the air and say, I can't make up my mind, and they don't buy anything.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where we're at, where you have so many choices.
Yeah.
That being said, I think something else is happening. There's a stratification in all of the music genres. And in a way, that's good, because you can, whatever you're into, whatever you're doing, whatever that genre is that really touches your soul, you can zero in on that, and you'll probably find an audience, maybe 10 people,
but
you'll find them.
I agree.
Now, the problem with that, though, is you can also get so confined to that strata that you never listen outside of it, or you listen to just the periphery outside of it, where once before, you were almost forced to listen to other things. Like, for instance, and I'm dating myself here, but in 70s FM radio, which was kind of like the height of radio, I think, you listen to radio for the DJ's taste. And what would happen is he'd be playing Miles Davis first, then it would go to Chicago, then it would go to, whatever you can think of, Jean-Luc Ponty, and it would be so different. And you were exposed to so many different, wonderful, great artists that, in fact, it was very influential. Now, that's kind of gone away.
I think that's only gone away mainly here. What I was going to say earlier was traveling, from touring. I mean, I mean, this is a very, very passionate subject for me. Around the world, everywhere except the U.S., you can still hear, I mean, unless, correct me if I'm wrong from anybody who else is traveling, but I could still hear Miles Davis at one point. I can hear Parliament Funkadelic at another point. I could hear B.B. King. Then I could hear Minnie Riperton. But then I can hear Chicago, Led Zeppelin, Beatles, The Who, whatever, on that same station. And the last place, well, I'm thinking of Copenhagen, but Japan, it was really obvious. Okay.
Right.
It was very obvious to where the bass player, I was with NDRE at the time, and the bass player and I were like on the same thing, and he called my hotel room. He said, "Yo, are you checking this? Dude, are you checking out who, you know, what's going on in the station?" What? And it turns out all of us were watching the same music channel, listening to the same radio station, but they were all that way. And I remember going through like Stockholm, Sweden, every little pub, every performance venue was packed. Okay. It was packed. Downtown, you know, London or London town where, you know, Virgin Megastore still there, Tower still there, the 5-story Tower Records in Shibuya still there, the big tower in Shinjuku still there, Virgin Megaplex, all that stuff is going on. The only place we've really seen this is here. Huh. And the music industry, as far as I know, has not said it, and they probably never will admit that this is the place where we've seen all this. Oh, it's the legal downloading and all this. In 2006, Japan was downloading at 60 megabits per second.
Right.
In 2006. We barely get 10. Nothing has closed there. They can download Star Trek in what? A minute?
Yeah.
You know, and nothing has closed.
Yeah.
And we're still sitting up here beating our heads against the wall, wondering what happened. What has not happened was people selling records. We're getting club bangers. We're getting, like, you know, Just Add Water production. And there you go.
That's
and
true.
We're asking, what the hell is going on? Dude, it's right in front of your face.
You know what? You bring up a great point as far as how music is perceived around the world. I remember when I was touring and I was out with Al Jarreau and we hit a lot of jazz festivals over in Europe that, you know, we don't have an equivalent over here. I mean, you know, North Sea Jazz Festival, you know, some of the big jazz festivals where they have days and days of all these different
Montreal
bands.
Jazz
yeah.
Festival, yeah.
And you know, and we get all excited when, you know, at that time, you know, when they have like an US festival or something, you know, but it's, I mean, music in other parts of the world plays a really big role in their everyday lives as not just background noise,
right?
But as something that they enjoy and they seek out. And let me tell you, going to a jazz festival is not exactly an easy thing to do. You know, parking is never convenient and you're fighting with tens of thousands of people. And a lot of times these people are camping.
You have to be able to improvise to some degree, I suppose.
Yeah. That's a great point. You know, I mean, a lot of this stuff, obviously we're talking about, you know, in the U.S., but it's amazing how we get so myopic, and at least I do sometimes,
but,
in my opinion.
But sales have still taken a hit worldwide.
Yeah,
it's
no.
not like they're,
yeah.
they're any better anywhere else.
Wow, I'm depressed.
I am depressed.
But, I mean, but being a performer still, someone since I was 4 years old, you know, I've always known this is what I wanted to do. I mean,
right.
you guys have heard me say that before. Chances are pretty freaking good that's not going to change. But that's because I don't know personally any better than my passion and my love for this. Dude, Wilton Felder, Joe Sample, and Ray Parker Jr. were trying to help me keep my sanity in Europe in 2008. And I am not kidding. Those guys were, man, you, Joe Sample, brother, you need to chill the fuck out, man. You worrying about shit. You can't control, and, you know, but the point is, it still came down to your problem, Forrest, is you are not around enough people who are as passionate about music the way you are.
Right.
It's not for you to criticize, but, you know, what's missing is you're not around the people that share the passion.
Right.
And as far as sales go, man, every now and then I play with the Fifth Dimension. I haven't told a lot of people this, but I played with Engelbert Humperdinck in 2007. And that was, God forgive me, it wasn't an easy gig. But those two groups, they stay busier than probably any current pop, whatever going on around the world, whether it's casinos or whatnot, they are working all the time. You can still probably go catch Heat Wave or the Gap Band or whatever.
Right.
It might not be here. And, and it's so funny. Like since the 90s, I'm looking at MTV going, you know, screw you, because they're going, where are they now? Where the f- you think? I mean, I'm sorry. What do you think they are now? They're probably touring somewhere around the world, playing to a sold out crowd that's actually giving a damn about what they sweat and cried to create years ago. Just because it's not happening in the U.S. of A does not mean that it's not happening.
Wow.
That's right.
Forrest, I've never seen you get that animated about. That's the most
Sorry. I did not mean the profanity. I'm married to a pastor.
But you know what? Honestly,
but the timing of that profanity was very good.
But
I'm pissed. I've been pissed for 20-something years.
But you know, getting. You know, it's really interesting to hear everybody's opinion on this. And you look at the album sales going down and the people that listen to this podcast, I know a lot of them are trying to break in or wanting to have a career in audio and music. And I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year. And to see where music sales goes. Cause, you know, we're kind of at a time. It's, if is it either going to come up or is it going to keep the slide down? And it's just amazing how this time is right now.
You know, I just wrote about this in my blog the other day. And one of the interesting things is, yes, music is down whatever it is, I think 8% overall last year. But that being said, there were still 376 odd million albums sold. That's a lot,
that's a lot of
music.
I remember those kind of numbers.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to tell
you. That was just in the U.S. now. We're not talking worldwide, in the U.S.
We're going to take a break right now, mainly because I'm choking.
You must be choking.
And then when we come back, we're going to visit with Patrick and Diego some more and try not to get too depressed.
All right.
All right. We'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were getting depressed by Patrick. But we feel better now. As we were taking a break, we started a conversation, and because, you know, I care about the 7 listeners out there, I just said, hey, can we continue this conversation on the air? And so we are. And what we were talking about is, as I was talking to Patrick about, you know, he was saying how he's always been challenged. His philosophy has always kind of been with him through all his productions. And I said, you know, that I really noticed that it kind of explains a lot of the some of your productions all the way back from your early music. You know, some of the stuff that you were doing was so different than what was out there. And so, Patrick, has that philosophy always been around? Have you always had that in the back of your mind?
The lead-in was brilliantly done because I might have forgotten what I was going to say, except that you led it perfectly. When we were working on Like a Prayer, there was a Rolling Stone interview that went on for a while, and at one point they came down to the studio, and Madonna and I interviewed together, and at one point one of the questions to her was, what radio station do you listen to? And she said, I don't listen to the radio. And they turned to me and they said, what radio station do you listen to? And I said, I don't listen to the radio. And the question was, well, how do you know what's going on? And Madonna said, well, we decide what's going on.
Yeah.
And in the strangest way, it was kind of that, but not out of any sort of arrogant or anything. It was, I've never listened to pop radio. I never have. Why? And my influences and her influences and whoever else we brought in made this moment. And it's what I said earlier about a collective request. You feel like you're getting a request and that you're going to try to fulfill that request. And it has really nothing to do with contemporary anything. And that's the only way anybody ever breaks any ground. And I don't know how groundbreaking any of those things were really. Some of it seemed to make some sort of a difference. And retrospect is always 20/20, and, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. But, you know, at the time, it was the best we could do because we knew people were going to hear it.
Right.
And I think that's the – if there's anything I would say was a factor – is that there was no question that the second that record got released, everyone was going to put a microscope on it,
right,
and listen to everything and do what they could to, you know, critique it.
Right.
So you weren't frightened by that, but you were certainly motivated by it.
That's interesting, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and it makes a huge difference. And when people have over the years said, "What was the difference, you know, between then and now?" I say, "Well, that we knew that the second we were done, the world was going to hear it. Not 10 people, not right. How do we find them,
right.
That everyone was literally waiting
yep.
to humiliate if they could, but yeah. they were waiting. So you did your best to nail it.
Yeah,
so you brought in the best players, best engineers, best, that you knew how to do, and you played your best, and you did it until you got it right, until it felt not just good, but magical.
Yep. Yeah.
I think, but that's a great mindset, because mm-hmm. if you listen to even Like a Prayer, I mean, when that came out, that was just, it was so different than what was out there. And, you know, people immediately start thinking about the music and video and things like that. But if you actually listen to just the production of that song,
top to bottom.
it was like, I did a tour in England in the front of house guy used that to tune the PA and mm-hmm. it was really the first time I heard that, you know, in big stacks. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is just kicking butt, because it really does. It's just such mm-hmm. it's such a great track. I mean, take away the video, because at that time it seemed like video was overshadowing a lot of the music. But, you know, just the song by itself was just really, really awesome the guitar.
What he just said about, you know, the fear of being ashamed, that is a gigantic motivation. It's not there today.
Right.
Because people just do something and then they put it out there. It's like, how did I do? Crappy.
I don't care.
I'll do another one.
When I first came to Los Angeles in 1984, my first gig was as musical director for the Victory Tour for Michael Jackson. That was my first job. And so there wasn't anyone that didn't want to hang me for coming out of nowhere and getting this gig. And I went into the studio to do something, and David Page and a bunch of people were in the studio. In fact, it was Steve Picaro, David Page, James Newton Howard. It was like every great keyboard player in the
right,
world.
Right,
and
right.
It was my session, and I went to do something, and David pushed the talk back and said, don't worry, man, it's only your career.
Oh, my goodness.
And I just remember that time of being the new kid and being scared to death,
yep.
in a weird way, and in another way, feeling like, well, I got the gig, so I'm part of the way there, and
right.
you know, it wasn't about proving anything. I don't think really.
How'd you get the gig? Out of curiosity.
Audition. Cold.
Mm. Wow.
For the MD job.
They didn't actually hire an MD. They hired, you know, players, and then someone had to put it together.
Huh.
It was an interesting experience. It was a great experience.
Who were the keyboard players of?
Myself and Jay Winding and Roy Kaplan.
I got you.
You guys were on the Blind Ambition tour, you and Jay
Winding.
I did
the Virgin tour and the True Blue tour.
They had the True Blue tour, the Chow
that
in
was
Italy.
Jay and I.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Chow Italy.
Yeah, and Moffitt and.
Yeah, Jonathan. Oh.
And James Hara and I were with. Over with like Charisma and '08 in Eastern Europe too. Man, I ran him all down talking about you.
There's some funny stuff.
Yeah, I know that it is.
Wow.
Is it okay to ask a question about the Like a Prayer? This record, I got to tell you, that record alone, I have got to say, is probably the biggest reason I'm sitting at this table talking to you guys.
Huh.
And I'm not kidding.
Wow.
And not still at home in Memphis or in Chattanooga or in Atlanta. When I heard that record, my friend Jeff Williams, who lives in Chattanooga, great guitar player, he and I I started running, like going with him just on his paper route, just for the company, really. 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, and we were spinning that CD the entire route. And there are a lot of magical moments. And I'm not just talking about the songs per se. What was going on you know, in the lead in to Old Father. Because some of that stuff, like, literally had me in tears. Like, really.
Yeah.
There are, y'all know what I'm talking about? It, well, there, yeah, it's like a sweet, the record is like a sweet. Exactly. What was going on? That was not like some little, I'm going to put some little catchy pop thing. That sounded like some serious, that to me, that struck a really deep chord. Like, what happened and what was going on there? What made you do
that? We should just leave it at that. Then.
Leave the magic.
You know what? The paper route was cooler.
Well, that's how I perceive. I'm going to perceive it. Perceive it the way I do.
My memory for these things isn't the greatest, but you're talking about dun 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 that thing.
Well,
it was then put with a string section playing it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and you had
it was an improvisation I did on the spot for the string section, and we dropped it in as a segue.
Because you had this little melodic thing chiming over the top of the marcato.
Yeah, boom, beam, boom, the JMIJP, just stuff.
Wow.
You know, here's the thing about that record.
I hope I can just do stuff sometimes.
but remember who's in the room and what you're doing and what you're up against and what you're doing. And who's, you know, I mean, there's a whole thing there that happened, knowing full well that the world's going to hear it. So whether you labor over it or it happens in 1 second, you know that. And when you have it, you have it. And there was a lot of things we took great pains with. In the song called Dear Jessie.
Yes.
Which is my daughter is Jessie. And she was a friend of Madonna's, and we started working on that song, and she said it reminded her when I showed it to her of Dear Prudence. And I said, you know, and she just kept writing, and she looked up and said, "How about Dear Jessie?" And I went, "I'm into that, I'm good with that." And so, you know, so my daughter's at 25 still trying to live that down.
Dang it.
But there was we went to the Griffith Park and recorded the merry-go-round for the middle section, and there was that whole thing where it slowed down and sped up, and some of that was quite a bit of work. The songs were written one a day for 7 days, and we were done. And the vocals were done the day we wrote them and never sang again. So the songwriting and the lead vocals were done one song a day. And then it was just overdubs, and it was done very, very quickly.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I know it's brutal, but it's
true. No, I'm just, whatever, the magic was captured. God bless you.
Because it was Jeff Beccaro, and it was built. And you know what? When you talk about PA tuning, there's another record that I did right after that called Toy Matinee.
Right. Oh, wow. Yeah, that one too.
And that's another one that people tune PAs to, even to this day.
Yeah.
And there's a name that's the reason for that, and it's Bill Bottrell. And those of us that know who Bill Bottrell is understand that's why. It wasn't me. It wasn't who played. It wasn't anything. The Sonics was Bill Bottrell.
Wow.
Purely. And just that, you know.
And that album, it's still so creative when you listen to it. Mm-hmm. You still go, oh, I like that drum. I like this. I like that.
It's great.
And you think about it, it's all played.
Yeah, I did.
Before Pro Tools, before quantizing and all the auto-tuning crap.
For real.
But now you can get a microphone with auto-tune. And you can sing like crap for only $40. Why would you exchange this with the old
piano?
Exactly. Why would you exchange that with a $4 all-tuning microphone?
The stories are lovely. You know, I could tell them for weeks. And there's some really, really great ones, and there's some really cool anecdotal stuff. But the fact is, we were all trying our best at a time when the bar was high.
Just know.
Not at its highest, but it was high.
I dig it. But just know that I'm sure more than just myself. But there, I know that speaking for me, I'm sitting. I know I'm sitting here right now because that record made me. That record alone. I mean, I have all this metal stuff, sure. But I'm just saying, when I heard that record, I knew that I needed to play with the best people. I knew that I wanted to be associated with the best. When I heard that record, I did. And then the Blunt Ambition Tour, which I call, you know, the Like a Prayer Tour, the Dick Tracy Tour, you know, it was combined. You produced Dick Tracy as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I wrote those songs as well.
Unbelievable.
And that was 3 weeks. Soup to nuts.
Well, we're so sorry that Patrick Lynch will not live to see tomorrow.
But Dark Side of the Moon was 28 days. I mean, Thick as a Brick, which is one of my favorites, was 8 days of recording time.
We could take them. Wow.
Yeah. But look at it. There's this... You know, look at this trend. I mean, where you have to produce and you have to be on the A game, and you have the, you know, your career on the line, you know, and it's just, it's amazing now that, you know, nowadays, a lot of times you don't have that edge. You don't have that thing that's going to motivate
you. You can fix it. If you couldn't fix it.
Yeah.
Everything changes. And anyone who's listening, get a metronome, shut off your quantizer, shut off your auto-tune, and find out who you are.
Dig it.
and then take it from there. You know, compare yourself to the best and take it from there. It's really the only way you'll ever know if you have something to offer or not. When there's a grid that does pitch and time, the difference between Keith Moon and John Bonham is negligible. Mm-hmm. When there's no grid, the difference is massive, and maybe your listeners don't even know who those two guys are. I hope you do. But even on the same drum kit, we could tell them apart because they felt things differently.
Right.
We all feel things differently.
Right.
We should not subject the public and the listeners to something that's been decided by a grid that operates at a very slow resolution.
Wow.
The human spirit is way bigger than that.
That's just fantastic. Especially now hearing this.
That's the last offering you're going to get that's not cynical.
to
the cynicism.
This is just brilliant because it just explains so much, especially first time I heard Toy Matinee, that was for me, it was just phenomenal. Just everything, the playing, the sonics, what it sounded like, the mix, everything was just, I love that album. I still pull it out every now and then, listen to the whole thing front to back because it's just awesome. And
I have to say I'm very grateful for that. I'm very grateful. Forced, you know, I mean, it's lovely to think that somehow something I was part of inspired people. It seems so long ago, and it's such a shadow. Yeah.
It's timeless.
It is good. So, more money coming? No.
Hey, this might be the only opportunity I have. I'll give you my email.
Every day.
tell me that I
inspired somebody. That's good for me.
We've had that, and you've probably inspired more than just somebody, a ton of people. But, you know, that was looking back. Let's talk about some of the stuff you're doing now. Let's talk about what you and Diego are up to.
Well, I'll tell you how we basically got the idea for what we're doing. We were sitting at the sushi restaurant, and he wanted to do something with his piano performances, and I like to twist sounds into other things.
Right.
And he said, maybe I can give you my piano for performances. I said, okay, great. And then there was a moment of silence, and I went, maybe we can do it live. And he asked, can we do it live at the same time? So basically, what we're doing live, it's... He plays the piano and everything, it's improvised. And I play the trees, the Xperi bass and other things. And at the same time,
the light bulb.
Yeah. Light bulb's brilliant.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to say I play the light bulb, but...
You do.
But somehow, yeah, there's
I want to know what you're doing. I mean, what do you mean?
You see, there's a video. We can probably post the video.
Yeah, I'll put a link to
yeah.
it.
And,
you see everything.
But the very interesting part of this is that everything we play, it's being... processed in real time. And when I say processed, I don't mean applying a reverb or a chorus or a delay, something. No, it's actually a sound design process it's happening in real time. I mean, the kind of stuff that I would do for Omnisphere,
right?
You know, I can do it live and it can be so much more musical because it's happening in real time. My sound design thing that transforms his piano performance into soundscapes and rhythms affects what he plays, and what he plays affects what I do. So I have strips of controllers that controls parameters, levels, and stuff.
Right. Yeah.
It looks like I'm, you know, checking my email like crazy. I'm here with Patrick, okay? I can't talk too much. But in fact, I'm just doing a lot of different things at the same time. And what comes out of it, it's so alive and inspiring for both of us. And so we did this project. We did a very simple video that we filmed just to show around to friends what we were doing. And then DTS saw the video, and they were at the same time introducing this new 11.1 technology. And they said, maybe you guys can do this because your stuff would work very well with this. And we did it, basically. Mm-hmm.
Now, they're doing that in 11. Have you heard it in 11.1?
We mixed.
Yeah. We mixed in 11.1, yeah.
And how was that? What's, tell me the 11.1
okay.
setup.
I'll tell you this, okay.
Left, right, center.
It's very funny because when you talk about this, it sounds like, yeah, 5.1, 7.1, 11.1. It doesn't really give you the feeling of what it is. Right. But when we were there, okay, now you, in 11.1, you have center, left, right, then more on the left, more on the side, more on the right, and then you have the backward speakers, and then you have the height speakers.
Okay.
Okay, those make a gigantic difference, yeah. Because when we were listening, okay, we put the with the tree, I was playing the leaves, and again, it's funny to say I played the leaves, but I'm developing a technique here. So when you put those sounds up there, you start to feel like you are somewhere in a real place. You turn those speakers off, and you immediately look in front of you, as you would look with a stereo setup.
Right.
And so when we were mixing, it was like, wow, this is cool. It's really cool. And then the piano, it's basically surrounding you, so you're sitting in the middle of the piano, and it's wow. great.
That's great. Yeah.
Now, do they have an 11.1 matrix?
No.
Mean, is that...
At this
no,
point...
they have a 7 and a 4.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's 11, right?
Seven. Let me count. Wait.
Sort of two height channels. Two height channels?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Front two front height
yeah.
channels.
Yeah.
I did some stuff with Tom Holman when he had his 10.2 system, 10.2 system, which is he was always big on the height channels. Tom Holman is the father of THX. That's Tom Holman Experiment, and right. kind of the godfather of surround sound. He was the guy that coined 5.1.
I read his book.
Yeah, yeah, it was excellent. But he was kind of on top of the high channels way before anybody. And, you know, DTS is just kind of getting hip to it. You know, I don't know, about 10 years later. But it makes such a huge difference, just yeah. in realism, having those high channels. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Yeah. The other thing too,
anybody that went to a concert saw a PA flown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a few million people that went, that sounds really good coming from there. I like that.
Yeah, right,
well,
right.
And especially if you were in the front of the auditorium where you had the PA that was flown, but then you could hear the wash from the stage.
Right. Yeah.
Because then you'd get the full impact
the fills, as they call them.
But sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, no, I did some stuff with the holophone as well, which actually yep. has a height channel yep. on it. And it's you can't use too much of it, but it's kind of like reverb. You put a whole lot, then it washes out. Sounds terrible. You put a little bit in, all of a sudden, it just explodes in terms yeah. of realism. It's great. Yeah. So, yes, yeah. I can only imagine what it sounds like, what you guys are doing.
It's a very creative experience. I mean, I've been bugging DTS since we started working on this. You guys need to release a system for musicians.
Right.
Because this would actually make if I would have a system like that, I would invite people to come over and check my music.
Right.
I would be proud to make great music that sounds great in 11.1. because I have a system to play it.
Right.
We've talked about the idea of doing an install.
Yeah.
Of you know, convincing someone to make a space that has multiple channels where you could have people perform live, and so that the listener would get an experience of it. And as long as it had some logic to it, it could be, you know, be interesting.
Where is the system designed for? Is it for theaters? Is it?
No, at this point, if I am correct, I believe it's just for consumers market.
Basically. For homes?
Yeah, for home systems.
Yeah, they're trying to get it in yeah. theaters, and yeah. eventually I'm sure they will.
Yeah, yeah. But basically now this technology, okay, we use the system as we basically mixed with the system. But if you use a DVD, a Blu-ray, it mm-hmm. can transform your 5.1 into an 11.1 mm-hmm. Sound with this new technology. But for us, the interesting thing was to actually have all these channels available.
It's actually discrete in the stuff you guys
yeah,
do,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. That's what we did, yeah. And it's... seriously, I wish we could go there and have you wow. guys listen to this thing by yourself, because it doesn't really explain. Because I am excited about it, because because it really makes a big difference. And the room there at DTS is great. And
a picture.
It's it's deadly cold for me, but
you might have to, the phone might You know, you just press a button.
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. It sounds impressive.
Yeah, and the, you know, the four subwoofers, because the stuff that we do doesn't really have a... Okay, it's based on the piano and then the sound design and all the custom stuff, so we can decide to create these sounds that are out of this world. And you have a good reason, a good musical reason to just have these massive sounds in the subs or stuff that flies over your head and they just start spinning around.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you pan something, you can go... It's really
that's amazing.
It's fun.
Now, just because you have the ability to do those crazy pans,
not many people sound.
Doesn't mean you should do those kind of crazy pans. I mean, is it? Do you have to use a lot of self-restraint?
Well, as long as you put a wah-wah pedal on every channel.
No, obviously there are moments when you just want to keep things sitting where they are, but there are other moments when you start feeling this element should be moving. It really gives you the feeling of you know, that kind of feeling.
We did an ad for them as well, where there's a conductor and he's conducting, and the perspective is that he's conducting the orchestra, and the orchestra is actually these tubes with paint coming out of them, but you're sitting in the orchestra. And so when we were mixing it, you're able to say, right, then because we're on the stage, the violins are here, woodwinds are here, and yeah, I mean, you're really able to position it really exactly. I mean, the upside of it is it's a riot and it's a lot of fun and it opens up some interest. The downside of it is unless you're in that room with that calibration, you're not hearing what we heard. Which is, you know, we whined about that with stereo. You know, it's like, well, they don't have our speakers. So then we went to, well, like, let's use crummy speakers, and then at least we're kind of in the ballpark. And I think this, you know, that we're in mixing 11.1 and the music that we're making is really for me personally, and I, you know, for when we listen, we have earbuds and we're listening to one another and we're creating things. So we're essentially hearing in stereo, and you do your best to create something cool. And when you think you have, making it an 11 doesn't make the music any better.
Right.
It can make for an interesting experience. And I think it could infuse some interest from a public in a sort of a venue environment where people can go in and go, this is really trippy.
But
the music has to be geared toward it. You can't take something and just put it in there in a round peg, you know, a square hole sort of thing. You have to be thinking that way. And Diego is a sound designer, and I'm happy to play the piano and be quiet about a lot of the stuff.
come on, be quiet.
Until he makes mistakes.
And then
I speak up.
Yeah, like, for example, I touched the leaf a little in the wrong spot. I don't have nothing to throw at you
now. I'm very easy to get along with.
There's one thing I need to say. The kind of connection that happens when we play together, it's insane.
It's really fun.
It's really like we don't even look at each other, and we know where the piece is going, and it's improvised.
Yeah.
And then at some point there's a climax, and then it goes, and once you play it, it's, I mean, these tracks are like 7-8 minutes long. After, I feel like I cannot talk.
That was when people would come in and we'd sit them down and you know, dim the lights a little bit and play something for them. When the track would finish, people don't sort of go, oh, yeah, that was really cool. They, for the most part, they'd go, was there something in the orange juice? You know, like, what just happened? And it wasn't, it was just the abstractness of it.
Yeah.
It was quite abstract.
But, you know, I saw that video, the one that posted, and you could tell you guys were definitely gelling. I mean, there was a connection going on.
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool.
Really,
I mean, I hope you have some, you know, big plans for that, because it was really, really
amazing. Recorded all of the music very well, and we intend on mixing it all and leaving it as honest as we can. We were hoping that there was going to be video for all of it, but the video didn't translate as well as we hoped. So,
well, unfortunately, we don't have the I don't want
the
to
visuals.
Go
in. Yeah,
but anyway.
Well, let me ask you, because we're running out of time, and you brought this up earlier.
Yeah.
What was your rig? What was the actual connection?
Oh, yes.
As far as was he feeding effects to you at two channels, or was it
no.
straight? I mean, how did that go?
I'm using Ableton Live
right.
as the center of everything I do. I have a lot of different controllers connected to it. I have pedal board, the right. Korg Mini, whatever.
Right.
And then I created my own processors. I do all my custom impulse responses, and then they are feeding into each other. It's a very complex system. And that's basically what's happening. He plays the piano. I get the stereo signal, and then I output, 32 channels of stuff.
So there's a stereo piano
yeah, right.
that's dry, and then there's the stereo piano that has the little reverb that Diego's creating.
Yeah.
And then there's everything else Diego's creating from what we're doing and from what he's playing as well.
Because
right. sometimes once I'm off on something, he can leave me alone for a minute.
Yeah.
And he plays the Xperia bass yeah. or one
so
of his
the processing keeps going, and it keeps gotcha. Adding, yeah. and then the feedback. Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, we use it for this project. Because I needed a lot of outputs. We got the Apogee Symphony I.O.
Oh,
and the cards yeah. weren't ready yet. So they gave us a custom configuration just for that.
Wow.
And it sounded really,
A Neve card.
Yes.
And
when
you look at the actual audio and yeah. the way it went down, it's pretty...
Yeah.
It's
I had the 16 channels of 1073.
Wow. Like,
whoa.
Yeah.
That's not too
sweet
bad.
Sweet stuff.
Not too shabby. well, hey, listen, we're going to have to wrap this up. But, man, Patrick. Thank you so much. This has just been awesome.
My pleasure.
You've given us an insight.
I hope I wasn't too dour.
No. You know what? You challenged us. And I think that's if there's one thing that's really inspired me from just this podcast was the fact that you know, you got to challenge yourself, you know? It just seems like you have to you are your own motivator, especially
yeah.
nowadays with all these tools that can kind of make you lazy and
right.
kind of make you complacent. You really have to challenge yourself.
I'll intervene something quickly, Anna, because I know we're short for time. But if you read music at all, even the slide, if you can count bars, download a score for Rachmaninoff's Third Piano Concerto, and download
three.
A version of it, and see if you can follow it, and do it until you can follow it, and your life will be different when you're done. All you got to do is follow it. You don't have to play it. Just try to follow and watch and listen and watch what it does to you. Because it if you call yourself a musician, you should be able to follow, count four beats, right? There's a couple bars of three. It's noted. It's nothing too difficult to follow.
Wow.
Except forget about it.
I love
that
movie.
I was going to say, hey, I saw the movie Shine.
Yeah, forget about it.
Yeah. That sounds pretty dangerous.
Or the Goldberg Variations, anything.
Oh, yeah.
But look for music.
I think that's fantastic. I think that, you know what, that's it's a challenge that I think I'm gonna take up and
try it. It's fun.
Be confused and scratch my head.
Oh, yeah.
anyway, well, thank you so much for, like I said, for joining us. And looking forward to seeing what happens with you and Diego
yeah.
and your collaboration. If you guys are going to play live or if you're going to do anything.
We'll go by ears. We'll see how the thing will evolve. Yeah,
because I can definitely tell there's something cool. And we'll post a link to the video that's
Thanks.
Up right now.
Yeah.
And we'll put that on the podcast. Really quick, this is our pre-NAMM show. Everybody going to NAMM to check out?
I do. Mm-hmm. I'm going on
yep.
Sunday.
Going yep. out there. It's going to be interesting to see what's coming down the pipe,
yeah.
you know, what's out there, where we all are with this...
In troubles. As usual.
With the software and just,
right.
you know, it seems like right now we're kind of in a little bit of, not doldrums, but we're kind of in cruise control. It seems mm-hmm. like innovation is kind of just kind of cruising along and don't really hear any rumblings of anything, you know, that's going to be mind-blowing, but, you know, you've got stuff out there. Pro Tools 9 is continuing.
Yeah.
And see, it'd be interesting to see how the other manufacturers kind of respond to that and see what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. There's always Inventor's Row. On,
oh, yeah.
That's the best part of the show.
Yeah. Best part
yeah.
of the show.
Yeah. Go down to that Hall E downstairs.
Yeah.
And yeah, and where you see
and play
more.
That neoprene keyboard. play some Continuum.
Year
after year after year. I love it.
Yeah, neoprene keyboard.
Have you seen
that's
thing?
That's a good band name.
It's the Continuum keyboard. It's a fretless keyboard, basically.
Yeah. yeah.
I love that thing.
I should get one.
I want to play the Eigenharp. Have you seen that one?
No. Yeah. That's
seriously. I like. I'm this close from wanting to buy one of those.
It's a new musical instrument.
What do you think?
I think I talk to the guy, have respect for him, but I don't think yet it's a musical. It's a controller.
Yeah,
it's a very, very complex one.
Yeah. No, you're right. But, absolutely. It's a controller.
I thought, please make some videos that really looks great, because the promotional videos that are out there, they're trying to do covers of other songs. I mean, you're introducing an instrument that is different.
Right.
Don't try to do things that you could do with a guitar or a piano.
No, that's
true.
Don't.
It's pointless. I'm sorry, but his point is to try to do something else.
Well, and it has the potential, too. I mean,
it's an amazing instrument. Yeah. It has so much stuff available that you just have to stop thinking in the old way to do something else.
Yeah. But, all right. Well, you know, I'm sure on the next podcast we'll all come back and see what we saw and, you know, either be really jazzed or even more depressed.
Why do you point at me when you say that?
There's already been some pre-talk about the fact that some companies that always had big, big presences at NAMM are going to be a lot smaller this year. And there's definitely been, you know, the music industry still survives,
right,
the instrument industry, but apparently last year was pretty hard for some companies that people assume are doing just fine.
Yeah.
Now, surprisingly enough, I just came back from CES. Hmm. CES was gangbusters.
Was it?
Gangbusters. It was bigger than last year by far.
Wow. 245,000 people.
Yeah. We were there Thursday.
And not only that, the biggest manufacturers had bigger booths than they ever had before.
Mm. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really massive.
Right. Yeah. Because the form business is in better shape than ever.
Dang
it.
There I am again. All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens at NAMM. And, guys, we'll have to hook up sometime. Maybe we'll at least say hi.
Go for sushi.
There you go.
Go for sushi.
All right. Well, before we go, Rob, are you working on anything you can talk about, you want to talk about?
I'm working on the main thing I'm working on right now is a sort of a long-form music and sound design piece for a museum in Asia.
Oh,
I don't want to be more specific yet because it's going to get a lot of press when it's done, and it's not going to be done for about a month.
Wow.
But I had done music for the World Fair in Shanghai last year, and this sort of developed out of that project.
Great.
So that's been really cool, and I'm getting ready to do some serious upgrades to the studio that I'll talk about. I'll talk about as time goes on.
That's
and I do mean serious upgrades.
Yeah.
Really, really, really serious upgrades.
Switching the logic. I'm just kidding.
No, not that serious.
I was waiting. I hope we will have a chance to say hi to Bill.
Yeah.
Bill, we love you, but we can't help.
No, I said serious upgrades, not desperate ones.
Matt Force is on a roll today.
Yeah, he is.
This is awesome. Brandon, are you working on anything you can talk about? Or, yeah?
I guess I can talk about it. I mean, still working on Sucker Punch a little bit, working on
I saw the trailer today. Did you do that?
We're doing working on trailer. That was probably the tease.
Right,
we're working
yeah.
on the trailer as well as the TV campaign.
Oh, nice.
So it's not out yet. But John Carter from Mars is a... I guess it's an old book that a lot of sci-fi was based on, like Star right. Wars and some other things. We're making a movie now. And can't talk about the next one. Another fun one.
Nice.
Involving monkeys.
I like monkeys. Why are you looking at me like that? You know I do. Stop looking at me like I'm crazy. Okay?
Don't look at you like you're crazy. Look at the mail you get. Diego stuck on piano burner.
It's not my fault.
It's not my fault.
Forrest, what are you working on?
I can't wait till I get to the point where I can say, you know, I'm really not at liberty to say anything about this. I can't wait. No, lately for me, I'm feeling pretty good because I've been taking my music, my original music, more public. So I've been actually in public on piano a lot now. Never letting go of drums, of course, I'm just saying, but it's high time. And I really need to get my CD recorded and out like in 2011. I've got to know what it's like to not be hiding behind, you know, other folks, because otherwise I'm never going to be satisfied. Doesn't matter what I do.
Nice.
So
cool.
And Diego,
Well, I'm working on a few things. Some of those I can't say, but I'm working on other things with Patrick, so we can talk. Yeah, well, of course.
I'm an open book.
Well, you're here. If I say something you don't want to say, you can just kick me. No, we're going to mix. When we were filming for DTS, we played nonstop for 3 days. And the thing is, we played for 15 minutes. It was almost mixed. We want to finish those mixes properly, and once those mixes are finished, we'll decide what to do. Sure. But it's mainly to put this music that we created out in a way or another, and that's a very nice project we're working on.
Great.
Yeah.
Bobby, how about you?
I just started to write the memoirs with Ken Scott, his memoirs. I'm co-writing. And that's a lot of fun because it's rock and roll history that you know, going through. I'm in pre-production for the next new album. I have a new book coming out at NAMM, the Ultimate Guitar Tone Handbook.
Really? Is that Hal Leonard or who's your publisher?
That's Alfred. It's my first book for Alfred.
I gotcha.
And still doing both my blogs and some other blogs.
Yeah.
Do you do any book signings at the NAMM show or anything like that? Or
Yeah, I'll be doing one. This time. I usually do book signings, yeah.
Great. All right. Do you know which one you want to plug in? We're going to try to get this one out before NAMM, the show. I mean, if you...
Oh, well, it'll probably be the new book.
Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah. Over at Alfred, right?
At Alfred, yeah.
Great.
I'll be at Hal Leonard, too, also doing stuff with them because I have 7 books out with them. So
wow.
Doing some stuff with them.
That's great. And Patrick... I know you're working on the stuff with Diego, but you also have your solo project, your piano. Have you?
You know, nothing too specific. I mean, nothing too specific. The last couple of years, lots of writing, lots of exploring. Wrote a couple of ballets for Martha Graham, and you know, I'm not doing anything in a funny way. I'm being humiliated by Rachmaninoff. and very excited about what Diego and I can do, and I have some thoughts about what can come of the two worlds that we come from as well. But kind of taking it a little quiet right now just for...
Well, I'll tell you what, I would want to recommend and encourage the listeners out there that, you know, after you hear Patrick, you should go back and check out some of the music we were talking about. Check out, some of the Madonna stuff that he worked on and the Toy Matinee, because it's pretty fascinating now that I know you a little better and hear some of your motivation. I'm looking forward to going back and re-listening to some of those things.
There's a good one because I wanted to bring up because we're talking about surround. I did a record with Roger Waters called Amused to Death.
Yeah.
That was mixed in Q Sound, which was interesting technology. Mm-hmm. And that's still, you know, you have to sit in the middle, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
You know, we mixed for 6 months.
And there are monkeys in that album.
It's really worth it. It really is.
I'm not going to say anything more about it.
That's
always a good idea. It's always a good idea.
There's some monkeys. Association that's going to hear this and come to your house.
You know? It doesn't matter. My family is going to protect me unless you have something to say about my family. But I hope you won't get there, okay?
Anyway, that's a good listen to the Roger Waters records.
We'll have to check that out. Thank you. And so thank you so much for joining us today, Patrick. That was, I can't tell you, it was awesome. It was inspiring.
Pleasure
it was,
Mike. Thank
it
you.
Was a lot of fun.
What about you, Mike?
Well, let's see. Right now I'm editing some video on a project I can't talk about yet, but I will be.
Are all these projects porn? Is that what
you're talking about? One day, guys.
You know,
one day. They're
the dream. Well, I can't talk about that right now.
It's those nasty NDAs.
No, y'all just ballers. That's what that is. Y'all just ballers.
You know, actually, you know what? You just say that because it makes you sound, important. I'm actually just editing my kid's birthday video.
Yeah, wait till next time.
She doesn't want me to talk.
She doesn't want me to talk.
And then
it's a surprise.
And editing the first Audio Nowcast Spaces, and that's going to be posting around the same time that show number 100. And
nice.
That's the video. You know what? It's not really a video podcast. It's going to be its own little thing from the Audio Nowcast. Mm. So we're just basically going to be going to different places where people make music, listen to music, record music, and not just music, but audio, and it'll just be kind of fun. It's
right.
To just get a different perspective. And then the other thing is we're going to be hitting podcast 100. That's our next podcast.
Woo!
So that'll be some kind of fun. We're planning some pretty cool things. And
like snacks?
I can't talk about it.
He's not at liberty to talk about it.
But I will say that...
Rob's bringing the bubbly.
No, but... And then I do want to mention that this year we're going to be adding a couple different things to the Audio Nowcast. And one thing we're going to be doing is we're going to be having a series of roundtables. And I'll keep you guys posted as time goes on. But essentially what we're going to do is we're going to do a roundtable of, just mixers, a roundtable of just... sound designers, a round table of just composers, because number one, I think it'd be really interesting to get everybody together, and hopefully it won't be a b-fest.
or a fight.
No. I just think, I got this idea because I was actually with a bunch of VO people at one time where we were recording over at Trailer Park, and they were just talking and telling stories, and it was just really cool to listen when you get a bunch of people that all work in the same industry coming from different perspectives, and yet they all do the same job. It's really fascinating to hear them talk.
Throw in some beers. Yeah, exactly.
So we're going to be doing a couple of those specials, and the first one that we're working on for February is actually going to be the voiceover one, and it's pretty fascinating because I'll tell you what, it's definitely going to sound the best out of
me. Of course.
All those video people.
Are you going to order Ted Williams? 70s. Yeah. No, he's too hot right now. Yeah. Are you going to order an actual round table?
Yeah.
We have rounded corners. But so those are kind of some of the stuff that's going to be happening this next year. So once again, thanks, guys. And hey, if you have any question or comments and you want to reach us, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Or you can catch us on our Facebook page, and feel free to post a note, ask a question there. We've got some discussion forums. And that's about it. So from myself and all the guys here, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.